Hello, stats students, and welcome back to our podcast on statistics for the social sciences. Today, we have really what I've called the heart of this course, which is statistical significance. And what exactly does that mean? How does it relate to important elements of our course, specifically testing our research questions? Well, we're going to talk about all of that this week. So before I get too far, please navigate your way to week 10, that roadmap page, and let's get the week 10 slides up and in front of us. Today's episode is going to run us through about slide 20, so roughly half of what we're going to talk about. And it's kind of critical that we really are understanding these concepts, because what we cover this week sets the foundation for the rest of the semester. All of the testing that we're going to talk about is based on these underlying ideas of statistical significance and hypothesis testing. So when you run into questions, concerns, or issues, I really would strongly encourage you to reach out and let me know so that I can help in any way I can to expand on your understanding, maybe give more examples, provide more description, any way that I can help build up your feelings of confidence with these concepts so that as we proceed into basically the last 4 to 5 weeks of this class, you feel relatively solid on what we're talking about. Now, before we get to all of that, we need to do some review. It's been a hot minute since we talked about things like probability, and I want to connect us back to those ideas before we jump into statistical significance and statistical difference. We're going to cover the first two objectives on our slides in this episode, and then we'll talk about the errors and inferential statistics and hypothesis testing in the next one. Let's begin with reminders about probability. So probability of an event, slide 4. Any number between 0 and 1, 0 meaning it never happens, 1 meaning it always happens. My classic example is me, always. There is like a 0% chance of me running for president, and there's a 100% chance I'm going to fall sometime during the winter when it's icy. It's guaranteed that one thing won't happen and the other absolutely will, but usually we're dealing with something in between the two. So the chances of rain, or let's say of the government doing some specific thing, that might be closer to 0 than 1, but it's not an impossibility. 0 meaning it's impossible, 1 meaning it's completely possible and actually guaranteed to happen. So our probabilities, we're going to think about those as like the entire area under that normal curve. And that normal curve, we talked a little bit about that in the midterm exam review. That's that perfect bell curve where half of it is on literally one side of the hill, the other half, the other 50%. It's literally divided right down the middle. That's where our mean, our median, and our mode lie. And it's symmetrical in that way. So if it folded on itself in half, it would lay over each half perfectly. The tails are asymptotic, meaning they don't actually touch the x-axis. They don't touch a bottom line. They extend out forever. But where they extend out to is those really rare occurrences, those rare outcomes. So a score of a 99.99 on something like an LSAT exam. Extremely, extremely rare, where you're getting like a 179 out of 180. Also extremely rare, getting a really, really low score on the LSAT. Something like 121, which is 1 point above the lowest score you can get. Going to be incredibly rare. It's not impossible, but incredibly rare. And that's what the tails on that normal distribution should represent probability-wise in our heads. Most of the area under the curve is going to be in the middle. So most people are going to be close to the average. This should make a lot of sense in a normal distribution. So most of those LSAT test scores are going to be clustered around the middle, something like a 150, which is halfway between 120 and 180. Now, those are going to be the most common. That's the biggest area of the hill. Percentage-wise or probability-wise, those are most likely. That's why most of the area under the hill is there. And further out, where we have, let's say, more standard deviations away from the mean, Those values are incredibly rare. So we're connecting not just the idea of this, but looking at the visual on slide six. 34.1% is between the mean and one standard deviation below that mean, as well as one standard deviation above. So 68% of all the scores are going to fall into that range when we have a normal distribution. But if you get out on the extremes, three standard deviations below or three standard deviations above, you only have a 0.1% chance of that because it's so, so rare. So this is how we're thinking about the probabilities, right? The 100% underneath the curve and really seeing that area and the way that area breaks down using those standard deviations from the mean on that slide, slide six. This really helps, I think, put together the visual of 100% underneath the curve. Knowing what we do about a normal distribution or a normal curve means that we can figure out how likely any one outcome is. So my z-score of 1.5 on slide 7, I would simply use the process of looking up the distance between the mean and a z-score value of 1.5. That's going to tell me it's 43.42%. So that's that area between 0 and 1.5. And then to figure out the entire area below the curve or below that z-score value, I add in the 50%, the other half of the curve. And what this means, probability-wise, is my chances of getting a z-score of 1.5 or more are very, very small. 93.42% of the area is beneath that score of 1.5. So above it is only 6.58%. That's a really unlikely outcome. So carrying this forward and putting together the idea of probability and that normal curve and those odds of something happening, right? When something is really unlikely, it's really extreme on the extreme ends of that normal distribution, we don't think it's random. I want to emphasize this again. We don't think it's random when some extreme value on like a z-score shows up. It's not due to dumb luck. It's not due to chance. Something else is going on because it's so different from the average. That's really the important connecting point here. It's so far away from the average. We have to understand, is something else going on? It's not likely to be just chance that explains this. And this is going to connect us through things like hypothesis testing and thinking about our null hypothesis with this concept of statistical difference, or as it's more commonly known, statistical significance. So when we get into hypothesis testing, what we're going to be doing, again, to reiterate, is we're looking at our null hypothesis, or our explanation that really our independent variable doesn't have any relationship to our dependent variable. I want you to go back right now to your research question. Write out your null hypothesis. I mean this. I want you to actually physically write it down, type it out, put it in a text message. It's really not that important to me which format you use, but I want you to put it down on paper or electronically somewhere, because we're going to be using that null hypothesis as part of our statistical significance and our testing. Connecting all of this together, we're taking our research question and we're thinking about testing our null hypothesis to find out if something else is going on. And we always suspect that something else is going on. Our null hypothesis is not what we think is the truth or the reality of the situation. I do think that classes in prison affect someone's chances of coming back to prison. But I'm going to test the null hypothesis that it doesn't actually have an effect. Now, statistical significance is our level of willingness to be wrong about what we find with that null hypothesis. The formal definition, the degree of risk you are willing to take that you will reject a null hypothesis when it's actually true. Okay, so you're going to say, nope, there's something else going on here. But in reality, whatever you found was just due to chance. You have a weird sample for some reason. In more layman's terms, and I much prefer this explanation, statistical significance is the chance that what you find in your study is not what is really going on. So when we say we have like a 5% chance or a 5% level for statistical significance, we're saying there's a 5% chance that what we're seeing isn't truly what's happening in real life. And we're going to get the wrong answer to our research question than what we should get. We're trying to figure out whether what we see in our sample and in our study is due to chance or perhaps some sort of error, which is possible, or if something else, again, is going on. Maybe our independent variable is actually affecting our dependent variable. But weirdly, and this is the way the scientific method works with this statistical testing, we're actually testing the argument that it doesn't have a relationship, because then when we see those extreme values, we can say, something else is going on here. It's not just due to chance. So let's expand on my example. I keep coming back to, again, this effect of programming on inmates in prison. So I come in with my research hypothesis that says that inmates with 20 or more hours of programming are significantly less likely to go back to prison. And I'm looking at slide 20 here as I lay out my research and my null hypothesis. So that's my research hypothesis. That is what I think in reality is true. But I'm going to reverse that on some level and say, for my null hypothesis, that inmates with 20 or more hours of programming are just as likely to go back to prison as inmates who have fewer than 20 hours of programming. Or I could word it slightly differently. I could say more simply, programming does not affect the chances that someone goes back to prison, not including that, let's say, 20-hour limit, or whether or not you have 20 hours of programming or more or less doesn't change the rate at which you go back to prison. No matter how I say it, what I'm trying to express with my null hypothesis is there's no relationship between my independent variable of programming or classes and my dependent variable of the chances that someone goes back to prison. So, in order to test this, what would my study design be? I've laid out on slide 13 my study design, which is, let's say I have a group that has 20 or more hours of programming, because that's kind of my critical factor in my research and null hypothesis. I think at 20 hours is where we see a significant difference. So I've got one group that has more, 20 hours or more, and I have one group that has less than 20 hours. And all I'm going to be doing for my test is trying to figure out, is there a difference between these two groups? Because that's really what my research question is about. Does the group with 20 or more come back to prison at a lower rate than the group that has less? Or do they come back at the same rates? Or even worse for me, what if they come back at higher rates? Meaning that classes don't actually help people stay out of prison, but they make it more likely that they return. In which case, we need to talk about what's going on in those classes in prison. That's a big, big problem. Okay, so I've got my groups figured out. I design my study this way, and I go to a prison, and I have 200 inmates who are taking classes, have had 20 or more hours of programming. And again, programming means things like classes. My second group are individuals inside prison who have less than 20 hours. My key factor here, that 20 hours is how I'm separating out my two groups. My first group has an average rate of returning to prison of 52%. So within 3 years, half of those individuals are coming back to prison on a new charge. My second group that has less than 20 hours of programming returns to prison at a 68% rate within that 3 years. So that's, you know, 7 out of every 10, or almost 3 out of every 4. Are these statistically different? Are they significantly different? Well, I can answer this question by using what I know about things like Z-scores. So that's what I want you to calculate using the data on slide 15. If the average chance of going back to prison is 68%, we're going to assume that those with less programming are the normal average, and the standard deviation is 5%. So our standard deviation, remember, the average distance between any one value in our data set and the mean, or the average difference between the chances that someone returns to prison for any one person in that entire data set, in that entire population that we're looking at, or excuse me, sample that we're looking at, because we're not looking at the full population. What's our Z-score for the group of inmates who returns with a 52% chance rate, okay? So our formula for a Z-score is the value minus the mean divided by the standard deviation. Your value here is 52%. The question lists your average or your mean and your standard deviation. I want you to calculate whether this is, you know, a pretty big Z-score or not. And then once you've calculated the Z-score, what are the chances we get that Z-score? And what does it tell us? Did you do it? Did you take a break? Did you step away from the podcast and actually do the calculation? Well, I hope so, because I'm going to go ahead and rattle off the answer now. Pause if you haven't. Just take the time. This is not a hard problem. Get a calculator out. Do the value minus the mean divided by the standard deviation. If you've done this already and you've done it correctly, your Z-score that you should have calculated is negative 3.2. So 52% chance of returning to prison is 3.2 standard deviations below that average of 68%. And if I look at my normal distribution on slide 15, I can see that only 0.1% of the area of the entire curve is below 3 standard deviations below the mean, or on the left-hand side of the negative 3. That is incredibly unlikely. And we are testing here again my null hypothesis. The chances of getting that low of a recidivism rate, and it doesn't sound low, right? Like having one out of every two people go back to prison, that doesn't feel like it's a small number. But it is very, very different than the regular average of 68%. That's what our Z-score is showing. And it's incredibly unlikely that we got this result if it was just chance. We don't think this is random. Something else is going on. And for me, that something else that I think is going on is the effect of those classes. Looking now at slide 16, if I had this data and I got that Z-score, I would be saying there is a less than 1% chance those groups would be that different just due to chance or just due to luck. I don't have a real indication here that it's just random or that I got a bad sample. There's something else going on here. Now, I'd write that in a very particular way, and you might have seen this in research articles before, where you see this P with a greater than or less than symbol, and then a value like 0.001 or 0.01 or 0.05. Now, I don't know how all of you were taught math or these greater than less than symbols, but in school, my teacher taught me that the mouth of the alligator, the bigger side, always eats the bigger value. So if my statistical significance shows my chances are less than 1%, I would write P less than 0.01. The probability is less than 1% that this is due to chance. You're going to find a number of these kind of statements in very different places, usually, again, research articles. It's not specific to any one field, because statistical testing happens across a number of different fields and disciplines. So it might be that the P is less than 0.01. The probability is less than 1% that this result is due to chance. Or P is less than 0.05. And that only changes the number value. It's less than 5%. P of less than 0.1 is 10%. All of these are written out on slide 17, and I just want you to read through them and understand when you see that very short phrase, the P less than the 0.01, it's that full statement to the right that they're actually saying. The probability of this result being due to chance is less than 1%. Which is to say, there is a slight possibility we have an error in our understanding that it's very small, very small. It's very unlikely we've got the wrong answer here. I want to emphasize this because we are testing a sample. When we are not testing a population, we can't be 100% sure. We can only be really, really close to sure. And when we get a p-value of less than 0.01, we should feel pretty confident in those results. Less than 0.05, we should also be confident in those results. If our p-value, whatever we calculate for our probability of our z-score, is closer to 0.1 or greater than that, we should probably be thinking that, well, this might be due to chance or dumb luck, right? There's a real possibility here that we don't have an independent variable affecting the dependent variable the way that we thought. Now, visually, for those who might do better with putting this into a visual perspective, slide 18 is showing you more of probability and statistical significance explained differently. When we are calculating something like a z-score, we're calculating what's known as a test statistic. And when our test statistic, or that z-score value where it shows the observed result, the green dot, that is going to line up again with that observed statistical significance, or the p-value. P is always for probability, okay? What is the probability of getting that or something less than that, something greater than that? We're actually talking about what is the probability of getting that specific value relative to the rest of our population. If we are getting something that's very unlikely, like the p-value is 0.05, or it's only a 5% chance of getting that test statistic, we're going to say there's something significant going on here. There's a difference between our prison groups, and we need to think about what could be affecting that. We're never 100% sure of our independent and dependent variable, but when we get a p-value that's low, or a probability of it being due to chance that's very low, we should feel pretty confident that what we think is going on might actually be happening. Okay, that's a lot of explanation. I know it's a lot to process. And we only have one last thing to go over in this discussion, which is differentiating between statistical significance and practical significance. If you need to take a pause to fully think through what we've talked about so far, I would encourage you to do so now. But I want you to come back to this last point, which is to say, just because we find a statistical significance in our study, it does not necessarily mean that it is practically significant or that meaningful. And here's my explanation or example. Let's say I repeat that experiment with my individuals in prison, my inmates, and I find out that, yes, programming does affect your chances of returning to prison. But the 52% is not what I find. Maybe I find it's like, I don't know, 61%. So the difference between those who go to classes and those who don't is a 7% chance of return to prison. That's not a very big difference. That z-score is going to be somewhere between 1 and 2. But what if it costs me $3 million to teach classes every year inside prisons? Well, if we're not keeping that many people out of prison, but we're paying a lot of money to do so, this may not be practically that significant. It's maybe not that helpful for us to offer classes, even though it might keep a few people out of prison. If it's only keeping out, let's say 10 people, and those 10 people cost us $40,000 a year, well, okay, I'm saving myself $400,000 by not having those 10 people in prison, but I'm paying $3 million for the classes overall. In a meaningful kind of way, that's not very good for us. It's not very helpful. We can think about it totally differently. Again, practical significance is what's the value? Let me give a second example that I like to discuss in class. I have a new COVID treatment, okay? So you've got COVID and you get my treatment and it is statistically proven to make you better faster than what's already available on the market. I can prove that people get better faster, but they only get better faster by like 15 minutes. And my COVID treatment costs $1,000 more than the other one that's already available. Would you be willing to pay $1,000 more to get better 15 minutes faster? I can show to a very high degree, less than a 1% chance of error, that my treatment will make you better faster. But again, it's only by 15 minutes. So is that 15 minutes worth $1,000? Is it practically significant? Is the size of the effect significant? And this is what separates statistical significance, where we show that there is actually a difference, versus practical significance, where we look at the size of that difference and how meaningful it is. I do think that some of the additional resources posted for this topic are helpful illustrations of what this means. So if you're grappling at all with the difference between statistical and practical significance, I'd encourage you to watch one or two of those YouTube videos and just get a sense for how other people might approach explaining this concept. It is important. It is something we'll come back to when we start to look at not just testing results or test statistics, but also effect size. So how big is an effect of something on one, you know, group or part of our sample? How much does that COVID treatment have an effect? How much do classes affect chances of returning to prison? Or think of your own research question. What is the size of the effect of your independent variable? And that's really how much is it affecting your dependent variable? If it's a small effect, maybe it's not practically that significant. It might make a difference, but it might not make a big difference. That's how I want us to think about these two things. All right, on that note, let's wrap up this first episode for week 10. When we come back, we will begin talking about the kinds of errors we can run into with hypothesis testing, and then we're going to go through all of the steps in actually conducting that hypothesis testing. We're going to start with our null hypothesis, but we're going to go through 5 total steps as I've written them out to figure out what is the answer to our research question. As always, if you have any questions or concerns, please email me and I will get back to you as soon as I can. I hope you have a great rest of your day, week, weekend, wherever you're at in the timeline, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.